I want us to go back to that Genesis chapter 15 where I just read now, all right, concerning the iniquity of the Amorites. Now, there's a principle there which I've talked about again and again in under different teachings, which I just feel like this would be a good time to just crystallize it, and then we'll get into chapter 21 if we can get there. Now, the point is that God said the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet full. And then he said that it would take them down to the fourth generation. That is why the Israelites are away before the iniquity of the Amorite is now complete. Are you getting the point? Now, this is what I want to understand. And this is the main thing I want to just first explain to us here. And that's the fact that God works by principles. God doesn't just do things impulsively. You just wake up in the morning and decide that I don't like this thing like this. And then he just changes it. And, you know, I've said, I told the discussion I had with somebody on Easter Day. I said, look, that's a theme that every time I talk about, people are a bit surprised. I've had that discussion with a reverend gentleman some years ago. And he was surprised when I told him that God doesn't just make anybody do anything. He said, no, he's sovereign. He can do anything. I said, it's not true. I said, that is unjust. You cannot make a wicked man become wicked and punish him for wickedness. That's madness. Are you getting my point? I said, God did not make Judas betray Jesus Christ. Judas decided to be one that could betray Jesus Christ. Are you getting my point? And while studying, I have realized, because as you know, it's good to reason. It's good to question things. Charles Finney became such a renowned minister of God, what they call the revivalist and evangelist. I think the guy was a teacher. And he did his evangelistic work through teaching. And that was because he bothered to question things that he was told. All right? When he told him that God will say that I will harden the heart of Pharaoh and he will not let you go. I used to wonder that what kind of wickedness is that? You harden his heart, he doesn't let the people go. Yet at the end of the day, you kill his sons for not letting them go. Do you follow my point? Now looking at it on the surface like that, it's not exactly very just. If you look at it, just that is anytime you want to approach the things of God, you must approach it from the fact that you know that God is always just. So you begin to reason until you're able to see the justness or the justice of God in that thing that you're examining. Are you getting what I'm trying to say? And that's the part you see, it's like, let me just say this, it will help us. That's where scientists sometimes are better than Christians. Do you follow my point? Like now, Albert Einstein was a theoretical physicist. Are you getting my point? And then he found, there's one statement that somebody quoted, someone was quoting him, he ascribed the statement to him, and I was impressed by it. He said, I don't want to be right. I want to know whether I am right. That is, theoretical physicists, they write their theories, and then the applied physicists will now go out and apply what you have written. If the real things that we see in life does not prove your theory, the theory is kept down. Are you getting what I'm trying to say? In fact, but Albert Einstein said something that truth is very beautiful. That sometimes he looks at a theory, it has not been proved in reality, but he said that this thing is so beautiful, it has to be correct. All right, he will admire it and say, no, let's just keep checking that this thing is likely to be true. But despite the conviction he will have concerning the fact that this thing might be true or not, he waits for practical things to prove it right. Are you getting my point? That is, the theory is just an imagination in his heart until real things begin to prove them. That was why when he began to write his theories, he decided that the universe must be in motion. And then before the invention of the Hubble Space Telescope, that wasn't the case. Now, nobody could see that universe was expanded. But he said the thing must be expanding. All right? But then when they saw that it's not expanding, he modified the theory to conform with what reality was showing. And he said later on that was the greatest mistake of his life. He introduced what he called the cosmological constant and said that was the greatest mistake of his life, because later on, one man, I think Hubble invented a very powerful telescope that was now able to confirm what Albert Einstein said earlier. Now, why am I saying all of these things? Christians, now scientists look at it and they know that, look, what is real? We shouldn't just talk theory and they overlook what is real. Do you get what I'm trying to say here? So, but the reason from a particular perspective that what we are seeing is real. I don't know whether you're getting my point. Now, that's what God expects Christians to do. That is, you look and say, God is just. That is a statement of fact. It is not negotiable. So when you look at things that appear, and it's not saying they shouldn't look and say, this doesn't appear right. But you know that God is just. And if this thing doesn't appear right, what we do is we continue to examine the principles of God until we find out how this thing can be just. Are you getting my point? And it's only when you do that you are really able to rest in peace in life as you go through the events that happen in life. I hope you are getting the point I'm trying to make here. So now, why I'm saying all of this is that God operates by principles. And if he appears unjust, it's because we have not yet understood the principles of life. Are you getting my point? But when you say that God is just, it doesn't mean that if you see something that doesn't appear right, you shouldn't just wonder why it's not appearing right. You should solve the. You must bring that into a resolution in your mind. And again, if I might just say this as part of what I've been saying about the law of faith, that is when you're able to see it. It's not just okay. I know that God is just, and that is all. No. It's a matter of persuasion. If you cannot resolve many things, you may say with your mouth that God is just, but in your heart you don't believe it. Are you getting my point? It's when you have been able to resolve many conflicts in life that you will find out by experience that indeed God is just. Now, why I'm bringing up all of this, because I want to explain that issue of the iniquity of the Amorite, not yet complete. Now, first thing I want to understand is this. God is wise. In that, when I say God is wise, it's not that he gives words of wisdom. What I mean is that he knows all the principles that govern life. Are you getting my point? Now, if you notice, first what I want to note here is that issue when he used the word the Amorite. I noticed conspicuously that I did not say the Amorites. Are you getting my point? Now, first point I want you to understand is that most people say that the Israelites were in captivity for 400 years. I've explained before that it is not exactly like that. What the commentary that Paul made here about this is that the law in the book of Galatians, which came 400 years after the promise, that is from the time that these people, all right, left, from the time God gave this promise to Abraham, and when the people left Egypt to receive the law, it was 400 years. That's what he was saying. Are you getting what I'm trying to say here? So what God was saying, that from this time to the end of 400 years, that's what he was saying, they will be, listen to this, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that's not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. What he was saying, that the descendants of Abraham from this point in time till and oppressed 400 years. This thing was not written originally in English. It was written in Hebrew. All right? But let me just summarize without going into too much textual criticism, like they call it. What he was saying, from what we now have come to understand by the application in the New Testament, is that this, from the time this law was given and this promise was given to the time the law came, it was 400 years. That included the birth of Isaac, Jacob, his descendants, and then their movement into Egypt, and then coming out of Egypt. That was 400 years. Are you getting the point? Now, I don't know the importance of that for now, just that for academic correctness, we should get to know that. Now, he now said that in the fourth generation, they will return here, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. That is, it's important that the iniquity of the Amorite, well, that's what God was saying, is complete before they return. Why should the iniquity of the Amorite be complete? The point I want us to understand from here is that principle of due season. And my explanation of this will help us deal with many issues in life. There's something about God. Now, if you read the New Testament, when you use the word time in the New Testament, there are different things that it refers to. Basically, there are two. When you say time, it could be time. The Greek man will give you the word chronos for that. That's why you talk about chronology. All right? Chronological. You've heard that expression. That refers to time as in seconds, minutes, hours, all right, days, and years. You are counting the chronos. But the Bible doesn't all deal primarily with chronos, but it deals with the second one, which is kairos. Kairos, these are Greek words now, to help us to understand. Kairos also is used in English as time. The Bible talks about the process of time. The kairos specifically, it describes events that happens in the chronos. Are you getting my point? Let me explain this. This is the way I like to explain it, and it works very well. Now, maybe you enter university, they tell you that you are going to study a particular course and it's going to be 4 years. Are you getting my point? Now, the expected time of completion is 4 years. Do you understand my point? Now, you cannot take the university to court at the end of 4 years saying that they didn't give you a certificate. You get my point, that 4 years is complete. Because everybody understands. Your lecturers do, the judge understands, even the lawyer that you go to, who is honest enough not to want to eat your money, will tell that this doesn't make sense. That the duration of this course is written as 4 years. But that is assuming that in 4 years, you will do all your core courses, your elective courses, you do all of them, and you score enough credits. All right? That is, they said that within 4 years, you should be able to do this. Now, if ASU decides to go on strike for 1 year out of four, the university will not relieve you of that 1 year. Are you getting my point? They will just give you one extra year to get the course, the credits complete. Are you following the point I'm making? So though you have a chronos of 4 years, but there is a fullness of 4 years that you must accomplish. You getting the point I'm making here? So in those 4 years, what they are saying is that you must take the time to fulfill all the required things in there. So when you pass the courses of the first year, then you have fulfilled one karyos. That is, one season of your life has passed. It is not that 1 year, 365 days has passed as important, but that in 365 days, you are able to do all the things you are supposed to do in 365 days. Are you getting the point I'm trying to make here? And that's it. But this is just by the way. Just like the university will give you a maximum number of years to do that course, in the same manner, God is long-suffering but not ever-suffering. Do you get what I'm going to say? He will extend the amount of time somebody should do something. That's why the Bible says that God is patient, not wishing for any to perish. That is, within a specific period of time, there are events he wants you to accomplish in life. Are you getting what I'm trying to say? So God doesn't change you from one time, you know, English word now, to another because the years are complete. He changes you from one season of your life to another because the events therein are complete. Do you get my point? That is why the Bible uses the word like the fullness of time. That is, there is, you know, the Bible put like this in Ecclesiastes. It said, when the clouds are full, they pour forth rain upon the earth. That is, if you expect blessing in life, there is what you do, all right, until the clouds become full. And it's important we explain this. That's why Paul said that, if you go and read the book of Hebrews, chapter 6, it said, you must be followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Are you getting me? Because patience is important. And the issue about patience is that is when you keep on adding to the cloud. And the cloud is not yet full. And the point is that this is how it is with God. For those of you who did science, especially if you, I studied medicine, so I can easily understand this. But if you did science about conduction of what they call excitable membranes, we call it in physiology, excitable membranes, they operate this principle they call all or none. That is, if you don't hit the threshold, it doesn't respond. All right? You can put in energy, that's your problem. You know, you can say, okay, I have managed to put in 500 nanovolts. He said, look, my threshold is maybe 1 millivolt. Okay, at least I did better than the guy who put in 300 nanovolts. I'm putting in 900 nanovolts. He said, look, my threshold is 1 millivolt. You keep on adding, until you hit that threshold, the nerve doesn't respond. Do you get the point? That's the way it is with a matter of due season also. You can see somebody who has been trying. That's why Paul said in Galatians chapter 6, he said, we should not be weary of doing good because in due season, we will reap the reward. What's the next word? If we faint not. That is, if we faint, we will not reap the reward. So you have cultivated the field of blessing for a year, two. But God said that, look, the things that should be done will be done, let's just say as an example, in 3 years. If you stop 2 years and 360 days, you have fallen short and you haven't benefited anything different from the person who never started at all. That's why Paul emphasized that if we do what? Faint not. It's important we don't faint. The reason is because of the principle of due season. That is, due season with God is not just because the time has come. It is because all the events have been accomplished. Do you understand my point? That is why, despite the fact that the number of years that God prophesied, that's why sometimes you appear as if God, what he said is not really coming to pass like he said it. That's when we don't understand. The Bible said that God is not slow as some count slowness. Are you getting what I'm going to say here? You know, that is, there are different ways we count time. But so when all of us have clocks for God, he said 2007 is the year of breakthrough. Listen, with God, that determination of breakthrough didn't start the year of 2006 when you prayed all night into 2007. Do you get my point? So 2007 cannot be the year of breakthrough for everybody. It is not possible. All right? You can say things to encourage people. Do you understand what I'm going to say? Each person keys into the season of life. Do you follow my point? That is, when you have done all the things necessary for your season, 2007, and indeed, somebody might prophesy 2007, if I may just explain this again, prophesy, 2007, the year of breakthrough, At the end of the day, 90% of the church has not experienced anything but breakdown and collapse. Are you following my point? The reason is because when you prophesy what God wants to do, again, there are things people need to do to break open that thing. Are you following what I'm trying to say here? And that's what I'm talking about, the matter of due season. That is, when the season is due. It is not because the time has been accomplished. It is because the events therein have been accomplished. Now, let me just emphasize that I feel like it will bless the people of God. That is the issue of not being weary in doing good. Because, look, sometimes, you know, I've been thinking about this, our election, the last few days, you know, I've been talking with a lot of people, and I said, my God, this is discouraging. Do you follow my point? I said, no, really, it is discouraging. What just makes people like me happy is that, my own is that, do I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. Are you getting my point? And that, you know, there's a spiritual force in the air, and of course, like they always say, that the darkest hours are just before dawn. Do you get my point? And so, if things being dark right now, it doesn't mean anything. You know, you can turn the next minute, and then the sun is shining. Are you getting my point? There are times, you know, it's raining heavily, you keep moving. I learned this one many years ago. You know, I was in a taxi, and it was raining very heavily. And I felt that the taxi man should park. All right? This rain was too heavy. The man said, no, he has to keep going. I said, why? He said, we'll soon come out of the rain. Then he don't know that the man is right. There's no rain everywhere. But we are just in the center of the heavy rain. So he kept on driving. It was bad. Visibility was very poor. But the man kept on going slowly. And he was right. After some time, the rain just stopped abruptly. The way it started was the way it ended. So you see, it's raining right now. Doesn't tell you that you take the next step, you won't be out of the rain. Are you following what I'm saying? So you see, things like that happen can be discouraging. But when you understand these principles, your heart is enlarged and it is lifted. You know that, look, this doesn't mean that God is not working. Now, in this discussion I've been having with people, I realized something. Now, let me just explain this. You see, let me sit about the matter of iniquity of the Amorites. First, let me just say this. It's important I say it. Now, why did he say Amorite, not Amorites? Now, I noticed that I checked and found out, look, it's Amorite he's saying. And I'll say this to you. There's definitely, now, what I want to say now, I may not be accurate on the history around that, but the principle is perfect. Are you getting my point? Now, this is what I believe. There's an Amorite who began a kind of practice, who began to do things that were wrong, that were going to beget judgment. Now, this is an important thing you should understand. The man starts a set of things, puts them in motion, but spiritual things are in measures. I've said that again and again. That's what I'm going to explain again. There is a measure of prayer. The Bible talks about the prayer of the saints. All right? They were being put in censers. All right? There you hear that it talks about of his fullness we have received grace upon grace. There are different measures of grace. All right? There's what the Bible calls the fullness of Godhead. That is, it's possible to experience parts of God and not the fullness of God. Are you getting my point? You say faith, grace upon grace. You talk about from one level of faith to another. That is talking about, Jesus will tell you about little faith and great faith. It shows that things like that are in measures. Prayers can be measured. That is, you continue praying until a particular time. Elijah was praying at the time, and he told his servant, keep on looking. What he was doing was to feel the measure of prayer necessary to bring forth rain at that point in time. Are you getting my point? So when people begin to sin also, sin begets judgment, but the amount of judgment it can beget also varies. So God begins to measure the sin, and you will see that Bible says that people pile sin upon sin. You are getting the principle here. Now, when God is going somewhere, even when he has set a man for judgment, that is, he looks and says, this guy is definitely going to be punished for this thing he's doing. But the degree of punishment I desire for him, he doesn't merit it yet. So what does he do? He leaves him to continue sinning. People wonder why God has not judged this guy. God said, when I want to judge him, I want to judge him absolutely. So if I judge him now, his children will survive. If I judge him now, what he has produced on this earth will survive. So let him sin some more that I might end him, end his children, end every memory of him. Do you get my point? Now, this is a problem. Sometimes that is not done in one generation. The man sins, he experiences little judgment and he dies. And God says, okay, what about his descendants? There are two kinds of descendants you must understand about spiritual things. There are spiritual descendants and there are physical descendants. And Paul has helped us to understand that a physical descendant may not be a true spiritual descendant. That is, if the descendant of Amorite does not do that, the Amorite, there was a particular Amorite. Are you getting my point? If his descendant, one particular one amongst descendants doesn't do the work of the father, then he's not counted spiritually as one of the descendants of the Amorites. The Bible talked about us being descendants of Abraham, and that is by faith, because we are doing the works of Abraham. Now, these people live in that geographical location, and they continue to perpetrate the iniquity of their father. Are you getting my point? From one generation to another. And God looks and says, well, I want to give this land to my people. Now, this is the next point I want you to understand. God gives a promise. It doesn't mean he just does it despite. That's why these things take time. He told the children of Israel, I am not bringing you in because of your righteousness. I am taking them out because of their wickedness. Now, for you, now this is the interesting part. They are coming in purely based on promise. Those people are leaving the place because of judgment for their iniquity. Are you getting my point? He now told them that if you don't want to leave the way they left, you also must not do what they are doing. That is, the only reason they are going away was because of what they did. Do you understand the point I'm making? And God didn't want his descendants to mix with the Amorites. So he said, go away from now here and wait until I have judged the people. But I cannot judge them until their iniquity is full. And it will take about 4 generations for me to do it. Are you getting my point? You see, just like you plot graph for good, there's also graph for evil. What I mean is that if God wants to bless you greatly, you dig a good foundation. When God wants to kill somebody absolutely and wipe off his memory from the surface of the earth, no, he has to dig the foundation of iniquity very deep. So the people keep on feeling it. They keep on feeling it. Then suddenly a time comes. You know, they have a saying in my place that a child is pouring oil on the floor every day. Nobody says anything. Then one day he sprinkles water and then he gets the beating of his life. And you don't understand. What is going on? This man is very wicked. All this boy has done is sprinkle some water on the ground. You don't get the point. The guy is getting the punishment for the gallon of oil he poured 2 years ago. You know, for all the oil that he's been pouring on the floor in the last 2 years. But what filled it was that sprinkling of water. It was the last straw, we say in English, that broke the camel's back. Are you getting my point? This, well, we are studying the scripture, so this will help you understand why God sometimes appears to be slow in judging. The reason sometimes is that, look, God for certain reasons just dislikes some people. Alright? They've done something and he dislikes them. And he said, look, you know what we're going to do for these people and for the rest of the world, that is, so that the world will not be contaminated by their iniquity. What we do is wait for them to sin properly, then we judge them properly. Are you getting my point? That is, the judgment we now give them, we clean them out neatly. If we punish him now for doing little, they will release him from jail after a while. Spiritually speaking. Alright, so let's leave him. So look at the guy. He just robbed somebody at gunpoint. He said, well, in the realm of the spirit, that is not an offense punishable by death. He wasn't planning to shoot. Alright, in Nigeria, it's an offense punishable by death. I hope you know that. And that just by the way. So now, God will just look and say, but this guy is a wicked person. So what do we do? He said, wait, let's look for somebody who is about to die. Are you getting what I'm saying? And let him cross his path. So the guy will cross his path. And this criminal will kill the guy. Say, what? This guy said, yes, now he has done something punishable by death. So what do we do? Hang him. Do you understand? Now, there's no chance of his being released after a few years. I hope you are getting the point I'm making here. Now, but what I want us to understand, like I said, is on the good side of it. Not just, I don't want to emphasize only the bad side. There are many things that you are doing in life. People say that, you know, you've heard me say, refer to this before. You said that, look, what I want in life is results. I say, listen. Is not what you want in life, it shouldn't be results. It should be the knowledge of truth. Are you getting my point? Because sometimes the result for truth takes time. Do you get my point? That's why Paul had to say, we must not become weary of doing good. Because in due season, we will reap the reward if we faint not. You are getting the point here. So it's so important because that fullness, because like now, you hear, you know, Oyunkajuki is not around. He has told me a number of times about intercessors for Nigeria, some of the things that some of the people have said and all of that. They have wondered why they didn't get the kind of results that they should have gotten from the things that they have prayed about and how much spiritual intercession they have made for the country. But it is not because God didn't hear. It's because of this principle of the fullness of time. Are you getting my point? That is, the Bible said like this. It says, sit at my right hand, talking about Jesus Christ, until I make your enemies the footstool for thy feet. There are many enemies. They have to be subdued one after the other. It's when we have subdued the last one that you cannot get up from my right hand and go and receive, all right, the victory on the earth. Like I always say, people say that, you know, the world is getting very, very bad. And damn, Jesus is coming soon. I said, Jesus is not coming back to a retreating army. Are you getting my point? He comes to receive a victorious one. Are you getting my point? The obstacles, that is the enemies of God, they must be subdued before he comes. You are getting the point I'm making there. So now, before you experience, maybe like in a nation like this, good that is so obvious in the country, there are many things that are going on. And each person is adding his own to it. Are you getting my point? Every time you do righteously. You know, I came back from Benin this afternoon, and I left my car in Benin, all right? So I joined my mother-in-law down to Onitsha before I now took pity from there. And on the low road, we were gisting. So we were discussing this politics, and I said, look, this country is so bad that he said there must be a lot of good people inside. I said, what do you mean? He said, that's the reason why God has not destroyed us entirely. He said, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. He said, look at Abuja as an example. You know, I was in Abuja last week, and my God, was it last week or this week? Last week, yes. And the city is so beautiful. Listen, the city is so beautiful. My God, I looked around. I was afraid to throw people on the floor because my people will be the only one on the floor. As all the angels will see, look at that wicked man. So you carry your people, you put it inside your pocket. You don't want to throw it on the floor. Everywhere looking so nice. So she referred to that. He said that, look, they had been spoiling Abuja. Mentioned the name of one man, one of the military administrators of that FCT, all right? And all the man did was that that man was the one that sold all the property that he was not supposed to sell. They allocated it to people. Said they really, really spoiled that place. He said, but God is merciful, knowing that there's one man who can do the work. Do you understand? So he didn't destroy us, knowing that there's somebody. You're getting the logic she was trying to paint out from there. And I said, that is indeed very, very, very true. But I mean, just use Eru Fry's case to give us an example about when God wants to really bring out four things. Because there's something about God bringing forth his blessing. He said he brings down one and lifts up another. I noticed the order in scripture. You know, God is judge. He doesn't lift up one and bring down another. No. He brings down one and lifts up another. That's how God does it. He said to Jeremiah, every word I have given you, you will speak. Wherever I send you, you will go. He said, lo, I have anointed you as a prophet. I have appointed you to pull down, to destroy, to uphold, to uproot, and to break down. The four destructive words, he said, then you will build and you will plant. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Now, before we say Abuja is very fine. Abuja is very, very fine. But you know, before Abuja became fine, El-Rufai broke, uprooted. Are you getting my point? Before he could build and plant. In fact, one of my guys who I saw in Abuja, they were just thinking about it. He said, this one, they said, they tell people to move from the market. They don't want to move. He said, El-Rufai doesn't have any problem. He will tell you to move. You don't move. Then the next day, a bulldozer will just pass across. In that all of you will park instantly. The Buddha is going somewhere else too. But by virtue of what the man had done in previous times, you know there is no defense against that bulldozer. The guy broke down churches. He broke down mosques. You see, it's not every breakthrough that is a breakthrough of God. They go and give you I'm telling you. Churches raised money, prayed, and at the end of the day, everybody went there, pull down the building in righteousness. And God doesn't say that this man is against the gospel. God won't punish him anything because he gave his rules. And everyone who broke it, all right, whether intentionally or not, that's the thing. In fact, they told me that the one that really humbled a lot of people and humbled me when I heard it was a ministry of works and housing. Built a four-story building somewhere. Every time I look at it and pulled it down. That this is a federal government building. There's nothing anybody can do about it. Pulled it down and planted grass. This is the interesting part. Yes, he said that's supposed to be a green zone. So forget it. Pulled it down and planted grass. There were buildings all over. The guy wasted billions and billions and billions of naira. Now we get there and say, this is beautiful. Are you getting my point? Now when God orders Saul, go to the Amalekites and finish them entirely, it's very expensive. But if you have seen where God was going and waited for him to get there, you will have looked also and said, this is very beautiful. You are getting what I'm trying to say here. So in fact, that's why I went to the back, I prophesy and said something that's very, very terrible. Listen, God goes through that order. I pull down before I raise another one up, all right? That's the principle of God. You break down, you destroy, you uproot, and you cast down before you now build, and then you plant. You are getting what I'm trying to say. So what I'm explaining to us today is this. So in a nation like this, or many things in life, you are persistently doing what is right. Each one counts. Do you get my point? Each one counts. Listen, each one counts. When you do good and it is not rewarded, don't forget, spiritual things are in measures. Do you get what I'm saying? It's been counted. Each one counts. God will now say, one day, Noel is watching, he said, look, that cloud is full. Then he pours forth rain upon the earth. Then the man, the young woman, becomes lucky. Do you get my point? You say it's an overnight success. No. It's the rain that started falling suddenly. But the packing in of spiritual materials into the cloud didn't start in one day. Are you getting my point? I mean, it didn't happen in one day. It started one day, but it's been going on for a very long time. And it's so important that these people of God understand this principle. Otherwise, they become tired of doing good. Do you get my point? Then I say, if you can't beat them, join them. Fine, join them. Unfortunately, there's a problem with joining people. When the time of the judgment for their iniquity comes, you're also part of it. He said, I only joined yesterday. He said, we are very, very sorry, sir. We found you. Are you getting my point? Do you know, sometimes I look at a criminal justice system and I feel very bad. That Jesus is very right. When he said that, deliver us from evil. No, when he said deliver us from evil, eh? It's a good prayer. It's a crucial prayer. Pray it every day. Wake up when you're going and say, Father God, deliver us from evil. Do you know, criminal justice system, Kingsley can bear me witness. If you are driving a car, you're a very nice guy. You went out with three of your friends who are devils. Then they go somewhere and they shoot people. Maybe shoot onto people. You're not part of them. You just drove. All right? And then you drive. You say, boys, why did you do that? Why did you do that now? You drove away. You did, they catch them and they identify you as one of them. You are going in. Accomplice to murder. Do you know, it doesn't matter that you did not agree with them. If you wanted to spare yourself, the only thing you could do was to run straight to a police station and say, please, my friends just killed people. But if you went away and the day they catch them, there's no, he said, I'm a very good boy. The judge might look and say, okay, you're a very good boy. We won't hang you. But life in prison. That's what Jesus meant when he said, deliver us from evil. That's why this principle of if you can't beat them, join them. The problem is that when you join them, the iniquity they've been packing for generations. You that joined yesterday, just decided, okay, let me just go and join Action Congress or PDP. I mean, oh God, poor you. Do you understand my point? That's why it's so important you are not tired of doing good. That thing is very, very important. In fact, you know, like I told you, because of our problems we have here, we can't go through all the scriptures. But one I like to refer to is when God, Jesus was going to judge Jerusalem. He looked at Jerusalem. He said, this city, now wow, one day, wahala will come. He said, what will be the cause of the wahala? He said that the blood of the prophets that were killed from Abel. You know where you know who Abel was? Abel. That chap in the garden. Now wow, Abel. In fact, Abel, do you understand what I'm saying? Abel. The blood of Abel, you want to bring it down in one generation. So all the prophets from Abel down to Zechariah. He said, you know what we're going to do? We'll give them one extra prophet. They just kill that one. And then his boys, they will kill them too. They will persecute. He said, because of that, I call it the generational connection. All the problems that started from Abel. One generation will experience the judgment for it. He said, but we're not there. He said, but you killed one prophet. He said, but this is judgment for all the prophets. He said, it doesn't matter. We don't know how to separate them. Are you getting what I'm trying to say? That's why Paul said, it is important we are not tired of doing good. Because there is the principle of due season. What is the due season? When is it that thing becomes complete or becomes full? It is that season in which, well, I don't know how God judges it, but everything has been done. You have added prayer upon prayer. You have added faith to faith, patience to patience. You have used grace upon grace. And then, in fact, you're almost tired. And then suddenly, you get there. I remember this will end the story for me. So I can get, well, I don't know what time do we have left. Yeah, we'll still have some time. I cannot get it down into Genesis chapter 21. I remember one story I read in God's Smuggler by Brother Andrew. I don't know how many of you read that book. But let me just say this again. I was blessed in life, all right? And this is how God blessed me in this life. When I was on campus those days, I encountered all kinds of strange books. Books like God's Smuggler, The Gentle Breeze of Jesus, I Dare to Call Him Father. Let me remember a few more of them. But these are books that they were personal testimonies of people that God had blessed. Are you getting my point? And they showed me, you know, and I'm not like their disciples, who Jesus Christ came and said, "You mean you didn't believe what you were told? I believe the testimonies of the people." God Smuggler is one of them. You see God really, 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 really working in the lives of people. All right? I'm just saying that by the way. I always like to encourage people like this. You know, I will encourage you not to waste time reading Robert Ludlum. You don't gain much from it. Christian novels are good, but you really don't gain so much from them also. They are good. They are very good, but you don't gain so much. But when somebody tells you life stories of the things that which we have heard, which we have seen, which our hands have handled concerning the word of life, then the person declares it to you. My brother, my sister, your faith will grow. Are you getting my point? Read books like Angels on Assignment. No, you read things like that. No, really, I really like to share. That's one of the reasons why Kenneth Hagin is such a blessing. I was sharing something with my wife a few days ago. That was yesterday. I said, have you noticed that the best teachers, preachers to you, you just think about it for a second, are those who tell a lot of stories? It's not just because the story, the message is interesting. No, it's just because there is something inside that is coming out when the man is relating what the Lord has done. Are you getting my point? Go and listen to Kenneth Hagin. He said, a great teacher. Yes, he was a great teacher, and I really believe it. But I was blessed most by Kenneth Hagin's stories than his teachings. And I mean that a proportion of 70 to 30. A lot of the disciplines I observe as a preacher, especially about money, I learned from Kenneth Hagin. I was encouraged, all right, by the results of it in the life of Bishop Oyedepo. But between Kenneth Hagin and David Oyedepo, I learned 99% of what I know about principles of money concerning ministry. That is, if you have to make an error, make it on the side of caution when it comes to money in ministry. Because Hagin will tell you stories. He's a prophet, all right? He was a prophet. Of how God told him that, see that guy? He won't live long. He said why? Because he likes money too much. Demo Shakarian's The Happiest People on Earth, one of the greatest books I ever read. No, please, I just like to say this by the way, so people, you know, when I see preachers just misbehaving, I just look and say, hi. Nah, I go look my wife, look my children. I say, no. He said, you know, the Bible said that another will marry his wife. That's the one that scares me the most. Nobody else is marrying my wife. Nah, like, I no go greet. Let his children be fatherless. That's very, very terrible now. When I look at those, I say, God, even if I have to trek to into eternal life, let me trek. No, I'm telling you the truth. He said, Bank, you never have an air-conditioned room in your life. I said, fine, but I will live long and do the will of God. But I know that, you see, when you take such decisions before God, that's when you have all the air, you even have air-conditioned passages. It's when you say, in this life, no, I must not suffer. I must enjoy the good things of life. That's when you will never see it. Before you touch it like this, they pull it further away from you. Until you say, take it, I don't want. Then you never get it. As a child of God, I'm telling you. I gave you a testimony that my wife said she heard in a meeting once. About a woman who prayed for, a woman should have children, she's married. She prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed, 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 cried, 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 nothing. Then one day she said, God, look at my house, it's too fine. Look at me, I'm a nice looking person. Look at all the things I have in life. Say, God, that's the only thing you don't want to give me. Fine, forget it. The period she saw that month was the last for many years. You know, such things, you start burning every day, every time. Say, she don't burn again. She don't burn again. She don't burn again every time. And she started delivering. I'm telling you, after that, you just begin born. One after the other. You are getting the principle here. All right, because you know that's just the thing. So anyway, you know why I got that? I like to say those things to encourage people. You know, you read a bit. All right, now let's get back to our story. God Smuggler. The man said that in one of the episodes when he traveled to one country, he was supposed to meet somebody. The address in that town, they were so confusing. He kept on going round and round, and finally, he had tried. He stopped somewhere. He was tired. Then lifted up his eyes, and he was right in front of the house. Do you get my point? He got tired in front of the house. Now, you know, I came up to that level when I'm talking about adding one good thing to another, adding faith to faith, adding perseverance to perseverance, working all this while in what the Bible calls patience. Then one day, suddenly, all right, it's as if you just take a turn. You know, you're walking like this, you couldn't see the sun. Then you take the next turn, then the sun is shining so bright. You say, oh, it was overnight success. No, this guy walked in darkness for years. In fact, maybe one day, one of the things I want to teach on radio very soon, when we finish maybe this Law of Faith series, you know, that's what we're in on radio now, Law of Faith, is that issue of how to handle affliction. It's very important. And I told you last time I was reading 2 Corinthians, but that's when I made up my mind on it. I was reading 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Sorry, 2 Thessalonians, the whole book. And I realized that, look, That thing is so important. How to handle affliction. If you go and read around Isaiah chapter 30, thereabout, you will see that God even is angry with his servants that he keeps in darkness, and they by themselves light their own fire. He said, this you have of the hand of the Lord. You will lie down in sorrow. That is, if God keeps you in a place of limitation, you know, you have to be careful that you don't force yourself out of it. And you say, how do you do it? It's simple. What you just do is that anything that is wrong, don't do it. Because the opportunities by which you will force yourself out of the place of the limitation that God has kept you in will be very wrong things. Do you get my point? You will know. It will defile your conscience big time. You will know you are doing what is wrong. You will know. You will see it. You will know. They will be not begging you about it. But you cannot start explaining to yourself, you know, start explaining that after all, you know, you know, when we have collected tithes from armed robbers, it is to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, you start explaining, you know, it will take you weeks and months to pacify your conscience about it. Then you know that you're about to lie down in sorrow when the judgment of God begins to come. I hope you've understood what I've said so far. All right, that's just what I wanted to emphasize about the iniquity of the Amorite that was not yet complete. Now we can get back to Genesis chapter 21. All right. So then the Lord took note of Sarah as he had said. Genesis chapter 21. And the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the appointed time of which God has spoken. Now, please, this appointed time, if you remember, it was, you know, because if you see, when the angels were going to Sodom and Gomorrah, that's when they now told him that, according to the time of life, that is from now, maybe 9 months from that day, that your wife will deliver. Say by this time next year, something like that. So that's what the appointed time that we're talking about. And I want to say this again. When we talk about appointed times, let me just emphasize it. Please, let's not think that once God has set a particular date, it cannot be shifted. Don't think about God like that. He said 40 days, Nineveh will be destroyed. 40 days, Nineveh was not overtaken according to the word of the prophet. Was he a lying prophet? No. There are other mitigating factors that came in and they had to shift the date. Do you know that God said to Eli, he said, did I not swear to your father's house that you guys will be priests before me forever? He said, now, far be it from me. And this God looked and said, ah, that was then. This is now. I've changed my mind. He said, what do you promise? I've changed my mind since. When did you change your mind? Because the heavens are the heavens of the Lord. The earth he has given to the sons of men. When the sons of men don't do things that are in agreement with the promise of God, God cannot fulfill his promise. Remember we read that one earlier. He said, see, I have chosen Abraham, seeing that he would teach his families, his descendants after him, to the ways of the Lord, the righteousness and justice. All right, that God might bring to pass the things that he has promised concerning Abraham. That is, if his descendants did not do righteousness and justice, that one I promise you. Suspension. You get my point? So you can have a suspended promise. And this will even help you understand. You know when they suspend a sentence, you know if you want your sentence, let's assume that they say you're a first offender and you're a nice guy. Say the only thing they've seen you do in life is go for Bible study. So this one, what you do now? Nah, mistake. So the judge will say, okay, according to the law, sha, we'll still give you 5 years imprisonment, but we'll suspend it. Suspend it for a number of years, I think. Uh-huh. So let's assume they suspend it for 2 years. All right, fine. In those 2 years, if you want to go to jail, it's very simple. Just beat a traffic, just over speed and let them catch you. You know, do something wrong. Your suspended sentence becomes actualized. You understand my point? That sentence is suspended believing that you won't break laws. You will just behave yourself. You are getting the point I'm trying to make. In the same manner, when blessing is suspended, it is because people have not done what is right to bring in the blessing. Are you getting my point? All right, let's just continue reading. And so Sarah conceived, verse 3. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. That name means, as you know, laughter. Is that okay? And then verse 5. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son was born to him. And Sarah said, God, see, I'm jumping now just because of speed, all right? God made me... He said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. Now, let me jump down to, please, where some issues begin to arise. In verse 9, it said that now Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had born to Abraham, that is Ishmael, mocking. Now, therefore she said to Abraham, drive out this maid and her son, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. And the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. Now, but God said to Abraham, do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, for through Isaac your descendants shall be named. And of the son of the maid I will make a nation also, because he is your descendant. Now, let me just stop there for a while and then explain a few things. See, I hope that won't take all the time. Now, the first thing I want to bring out here is the fact that he said that Sarah saw something. What exactly? People are not agreed on exactly what she said. But some people say mocking, some said playing. Whatever it is, whatever she saw displeased her. Okay? And whether it was good or bad, I don't know. But all I know is that she felt that that boy couldn't continue to live in that house. And she presented the case to her husband and said that, now what you are going to do, sir, is to drive out this maid and her son. And of course, number one, you know where it started from. It was not Abraham that started it alone. It was Sarah that started it primarily. Number two, this is his son, though it's not the son of promise, but it's a son that he had been taking care of, and the son had been growing in his house, and the boy calls him daddy. You are getting the point. And then, so when you add that to the third fact that this whole thing doesn't appear right, you follow my point? Definitely, it made sense that the guy did not agree. He said the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. Therefore, the guy was not planning to do it. How do I know? God had to intervene. All right? Now, this is the thing about obeying God. It's often very painful. Are you getting my point? It's often very painful. But you see, God doesn't look at the immediate pain. He looks at the ultimate picture, the thing that we are really going for. Are you getting my point? God said to Abraham, the problem here is that your son will be named through Isaac. Therefore, this boy cannot stay in that house. Are you getting what I'm trying to say here? You know, remember, if I explained that one before, it was the prayer of Abraham that sustained the life of Ishmael in the first place. You are getting that point. Now, it's important we understand that. Now, the things of God, that's the way they are. Sometimes they don't immediately they appear grievous to the flesh. But there's another principle I want to explain there in a moment. Let me just say this and then I'll get there. They appear grievous to the flesh, but God, looking at where he's going, makes people do things that are not, you know, they may even appear to the casual eye as very wrong. Are you getting what I'm trying to say here? But of course, the person who's obeying God, one or two things, either understands the spiritual principles behind it or has this communication from above that he cannot doubt. You know, the people who hide behind everything God said when they want to do everything. All right? If you want to change your mind, you just pray about it, then God will definitely tell you what you want to do. Do you understand what I'm saying? I was listening to Pastor Paul the other day. He said he doesn't go for counseling. He said, and he doesn't like people coming to him for counseling. I was telling my wife that, well, I understand what he's saying, but I don't totally practice like he's saying. He said that he has found out that a lot of people come, well, he didn't say a lot. I'm the one modifying it to make it sound nice. But what was in that a lot of people come for counseling, actually, they know what they should do. They know what they want to do. And they're looking for somebody to agree with them on what they want to do as opposed to what they should do. A lady came to me once. They said that she wanted to counsel in church, and they said that, okay, she couldn't see the pastor, that whether she won't mind seeing another pastor. She said, no problem. They told her to see me. All right. So I said, what's the problem? They started telling the stories. She's working somewhere. They transferred her somewhere, and her husband is not in the country, and he objected to the transfer and said that if they insist, then she should resign the job. And she didn't think she should resign the job because it means leaving where they are based to another place. And I said, so? He said that the guy doesn't want to change. Is that you want me to talk to your husband? I'm not going to talk to your husband, for goodness sake. He doesn't know me. You get my point? He said, no, that she doesn't know what to do. Ah, you don't know what to do? What you should do is grievous. That's why you have come here. It's not like you don't know what to do. You know what to do. The man had his reason for insisting. You were working all this while he didn't say anything. Are you getting my point? He said, the guy is not settled very well yet. Where he is, but it's not as if he has a lot of money. He just still trying to settle down. But he still sent you small money, yes. That they really need this money that she's earning. Does he not know all of these things? He does. So why are you? No, like at the point in time, man, I was like, look, okay, sorry, I'm very, very sorry. I don't know what else to tell you. Then discuss with your husband. If he doesn't change his mind, well, I think, and in my heart, the man, it was part of the love for his wife that there's a reason why I made that statement. And I said, look, for goodness sake. In fact, at the point in time, I started getting tired, like, well, I've said what I want to say, I'm going my way. Obviously, you know what you should do, and you know what you want to do. What she wanted to hear was, look, you have to be firm. You won't say because you're a woman, you let a man just ride you up and down like that. Let me pray with you. Let us agree. In the name of... that one, I lie. I will not be partakers of anybody's iniquity. I'm going my way. I'm telling you. I won't share anybody's problem. You go and suffer your punishment if you want to cause problem in your house. Don't say, you know, call the nurse and say that, look. No, I've talked to my pastor. My pastor said that I shouldn't resign the job. Then you now pitch your pastor. No, you pitch your husband against your God. You know what I'm going to say? So, no, I've prayed about it. My spirit doesn't agree. You're talking to your husband. Okay. This is just by the way. Young ladies, you're engaged. Don't use spirituality to harass anybody. Oh, you can hear. Are you people hearing now? No, it's true. No, my spirituality. You and your, maybe you, and even if you are married, because there are some married people behind at the back there. And you just said that, look, I have gone to pray about it and my spirit does not agree. You know, the guy said, I'm the son of Satan, have you? That's what you are saying, in effect. If people are just engaged, he will just run away. You won't see him again. He will just run away. Now, this is the one I'm coming to next. Now, because which is very, very important here. Now, why did I get this? You know, I think that somebody said they didn't like counseling, that people have made up their minds what they want to do. Yes, I started by saying that the things that people should do sometimes are quite grievous. But now that we are talking about the issue of, I give that as an example, let me now just go into the issue of Sarah. At this point, you will see that, you know, let me talk about nagging briefly. You know, have you heard the word nagging before? All right, the same thing as, there's a scriptural word for it, contentious wife. All right? And it says it's better to dwell in the corner of a roof, all right, on the rooftop here, than under that roof with a contentious woman. I've been married for, Slayo. I was married for entire university, Abby. I'm married for a very long time. I'm married in 1999. I'm not like these people at the back that just married last week. That's a lying car. I've been in active service now for how many years? Yes. You know, I traveled yesterday. I took my family down to be. When we came down from the car, I left my wife carrying my daughter, and they were walking. Little boy, another bigger boy, and my wife were walking. I said, I'm a blessed man. I said, and it was born unto him sons and a daughter. Anyway, what I'm saying this is that, you know the interesting part? Long ago, I used to say, you know, my father is very quiet. My father is a very quiet person. He's a very quiet person. You know what that means? He's quiet. He doesn't argue much with his wife. That's my mother. He doesn't even beat his children much. I can remember the few times my father beat me. I remember one of the earliest one I remember was the day I said my mother should give me some money before I went to school. And she said that she didn't have money to give me, and my dad went to drop her at work. And I was at home waiting for the school bus to come. And the school bus came, horn. I didn't answer. So my father came back. You are still at home? I was looking at him. Didn't the school bus come? It came. I didn't go. And the man called 1K because he understood why he did not go. Because I was very, very angry. My mother refused to give me maybe 1 cup of those days to use to buy sweets during break in school. So he flogged me very well. Now, he doesn't do that often. It's very, very rare. It's very, very rare. In fact, another time I remember I was much older, it was the prompting of my mother that brought the cane. Like, this boy is very, very unruly. So after harassing my father, I said, okay, let's put some order into his life. He brought cane. Now, what am I trying to say? So you can imagine that such people, it's not likely you ever said that he beat his wife. Are you getting my point? That's what I'm telling the whole story. So when I grew up, I said, a man beat his wife. I said, what? To me, it was so strange. How can a man beat his wife? Wow. In fact, maybe it even sounded more normal for a boy to beat his father because, no, you know why? There was one boy living not too far away from us. He used to smoke Indian hemp. And then after smoking, he will beat his father. Then the father will call police. Then police will arrest him. Then the father will go and bail him from. I was very smart. Then I need, you know, because then they say the boy smoked Igbo. And you know, the word Igbo in Yoruba is both for Indian hemp and for literal bush. Like if this place, if there's a lot of weed there, I'll say that there's bush Igbo there. If the guy ran into the forest, the word is still Igbo, you know? So they say, that boy, they smoke Igbo. I said, how can a man smoke forest? Do you know, for days as a young boy, I would sit and be imagining that. I'm used to people smoking cigarette they can hold in their hand. But how can he enter inside the bush? Is that he will set fire and sit inside? No, I really used to wonder as a child. I'm telling you, I couldn't understand how somebody smoked bush. Anyway. So for me, I've seen people beat their father. That one, at least, he was living nearby. But when they say a man beat his wife, no, to me, it was a strange phenomenon. I didn't know what it was so called. Then, as I began to grow up, I grew up very well, you know what I say. Then, after I graduated from school, there was one young woman lived near us, one of my house officers. We used to go to my church. The girl had a very funny character. Christian girl. And I said, my God, if I marry this girl, I go beat her well. That is... No, it was expressed with that guy, and he understood why a man would beat his wife. Just being a casual friend, I almost beat her one day. Do you know, just being a casual friend, though, that's when I began to understand the meaning of a contentious woman. So when I see contentious woman, that's why they hide, though. You there, house? No, I'm not there. Is this your number? No, it's business center number. Don't call me, please. Afraid. Like what? So after that time, when they say a man beat his wife, say, that guy, can you believe he beat his wife? I say, come, ask him what happened first. I say, ask him now, is he mad? No, be, I love you, take marriage. Something must have happened. Are you getting what I'm saying? You know, it's what we're talking about. When they say, no, I thought I've been married for a few years. Then when I'm now married, my wife is very good. My wife is very, very good. Yeah, there are times, I say, yeg beleo. If this thing continues for more than 1 hour, I will park to the corner of a roof, literally. Oh, my God. You know, after I was married for a few years, and I think I have a very good marriage. I think so. I mean, I'm always, you know how you know, I'm always running home. They're like, when I'm hungry, I run home. When I'm not, I run home. So I think it's good. I don't want to be a judge of my own situation. But this is the point. Even with that, after some time, I said, marriage is either God's idea or don't go near it. When you see Americans, they divorce 2 per second, don't blame them. No. Just leave them alone. Just say, God, may God have mercy on all of you. What happened? No, listen. What happened is that the grace of God departed. You know, it's like you go and buy a Toyota. So I love this, my car so much. I love it so much. I want to give you the best fuel that I can afford. So instead of putting petrol that they said, he said that, look, your own car must run on high-grade engine oil. So you open the tank and pour engine oil into the tank. The love for your car doesn't matter. Toyota made it. He didn't say put engine oil here. He said put premium motor spirit, preferably unleaded. Are you getting my point? So a lot of our brethren in many parts of the world, including Nigeria also, married. And marriage is God's idea. God made it. And you want to, instead of asking God, which kind of word do we use? You are following my point? You want to use what seems right in your place. Grace will depart. And after 2 months, they filed for divorce. I remember when the 2 Hollywood celebrities got married. They showed it on CNN. And they interviewed one guy. He said, what do you think about it? He said, lovely couple. I think they'll do well. At least 2 years. They'll last 2 years. I laughed. I think he said, lovely couple. I think they'll last up to 2 years. Oh, God. It's not their fault.
is the grace of God that has missed. The grace of God left them long ago. You cannot, let me say this, you cannot talk or preach hard enough to restore them. You can't. Because let me tell you what, if they threw you inside their shoes, you too, you will run. Absolutely. No, absolutely. Don't say, no, me, I'm a man. I can't start. All right. When they throw hot frying pan in your face, filled with, you get what I'm saying, and there's liquid inside. Once you dodge, second time, he said, unless they design this your face for you, you too, you will go. I'm telling you. So look, all those things. After I married Vivi, I began to give God thanks for his grace. That what keeps life, what keeps your marriage as a particular example now, is the supply of the grace of God. Now, this is something. You will see that the Bible used, I've said this before, there are very few people in the scriptures that God ever used as examples for marriage. Very, very few. In fact, we can count it again. Most importantly, Christ and the church. All right? After that, you hear of the way it was in the beginning. Adam and Eve. And that's because God, that was the foundation of it. After that, about all you hear about is Abraham and Sarah. And then, when they are given example of female conduct, you will see that Peter specifically picked Sarah. Paul also refers to Sarah. Are you getting my point? Now, the reason is because they will tell you about submission, about humility, about deferring to the husband. And if you have the Amplified Bible, read what Peter has to say using the Amplified Bible. But what I want to bring out from here is that you will see something here. The woman made a statement about an issue to God and then to her husband and then left the matter there. As I was talking about nagging at the beginning. Let me tell you this. What is nagging? I don't know the biblical, the English word for it, the meaning of it. But I'll tell you what I have come to perceive from the scriptures and from my experience in life. It's simple. When you state a matter, it is not carried out. You state it again. It's not carried out. And you continue stating it, trying to wear out your spouse by your much coming. Do you know if you shout something hard enough, somebody go hear? Even God, you cannot give him into blessing you. God, all my friends are driving cars now. It's only me. After all, the gospel has been preaching for you. You don't forget to sow a seed for anything you want in your life. God, that's my car. That's my car. Okay, this night, we are going to pray all night for something important. God, you know that after some time, God says, okay. Can I have some peace? Oh, yeah, give him one car. After 2 days, you wreck it, break one leg inside. They'll hang the leg for 8 months. At the end of 8 months, you will have learned some lessons. They say, anybody want a car? Not me. the appropriate time. No, I'm serious. Now, I'm trying to bring out the issue that, you see, in this situation, what happened was that the woman stated something, and that's why the Bible uses as an example. I can assure you of one thing. She made a statement to her husband once, and then she left it there. Now, there is something about God being the defender of the defenseless. God says he's the husband to the widow. He says that he's the father to the fatherless. What he means by all of this is that I am the one that defends people that don't have a defense. I hope you are getting my point. That is, you are strong. Maybe like in this particular situation, what the woman said was very grievous in the eyes of everybody, every man. But anybody with spiritual understanding will know that what she said, though grievous, was right. But she did not have the ability to enforce what she said that was right. Because she was somebody under authority. That is, in effect, she has become like a widow. Are you getting my point? She has become like a fatherless. Therefore, God becomes her defense. That was why God now took the step and went to the husband and instructed him to go and listen to the voice of his wife. Otherwise, actually, because the woman came issuing the man an instruction, listen to this, it doesn't sound very nice to people, especially women who have not heard the word of God. The woman came, said, drive this woman away. Gave the man an instruction. As a rule, a husband must never obey. Did you hear what I said? As a rule, he must never obey. Let me say it again. As a rule, he must never obey. If your wife issues you an instruction, you don't obey the instruction. You are turning the order around. Are you getting my point? You are not going to bless her. You are not going to bless yourself. When God was going to judge Adam, he said, because you have obeyed the voice of your wife, Do you get what I'm trying to say here? That was the problem. No, I know what I'm saying. No, it is not that. I'm not saying the man must never listen. Are you getting what I'm trying to say? I didn't say that. I said what? He must never be instructed by his wife. Listen, you can't be a boss in an office and your secretary gives you instructions. It's the same principle. Are you getting my point? The woman came and said, do this. And the man said, you can't be serious about that. But this is the beauty about it. What she said was right. Now, you see, we are trying to balance many things here. What she said was what? It was right. But she didn't have the power to execute it. She didn't have the power. The person who had the power to execute it refused. This is how a nagging woman behaves. Come back. That thing we discussed yesterday. Hafa. You know, you're always very slow when I talk about things like this. So. When the whole thing spoils now, they will say, I did not say anything. And let heaven bear me record, I've said my own. Then next day, they come back. He said, well, then I'm a part of this. I won't say anything again. Last time I told him, the office did not listen. I didn't say anything. But this is my house. I mean, this is my house. I wouldn't know we're not doing it. I have said this. You know this. That is pure and simple nagging. It is not good. It is a bad thing. You know the interesting part? I don't know whether this is good or bad. But no, this is not good. It is not bad. It is natural. The natural response of a man is that he ignores you further. I'm not saying this is good. I'm not saying it is bad. It's just natural. The natural thing is that he won't answer you. Now, note what I'm saying. I am not saying Sarah will not talk to his wife and to her husband. Don't even forget, it was obeying the words of Sarah that brought this problem in the first place. You are getting what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying a woman doesn't talk to her husband. I'm just saying she doesn't instruct him. It's not, you know, it's God's order we are learning. Then number two is that you must have faith. You must walk by faith. Do you get my point? Now, what do I mean by that? You must believe that your husband is wise and is intelligent, and God is helping him, and God is leading him. Therefore, if he is slow to take decisions, you must exercise self-control in not hounding him. I'm not saying you will never remind him. Have you forgotten that thing I said? No, I haven't. All right. I just wanted to be sure. Simple. So what if you will refuse to move? That is why God defends the person who cannot execute what is right. Who made this guy move here? God. I said, you must learn to walk by faith. That is absolutely correct. It's, in fact, that is the only weapon that somebody who is supposed to be subordinate to somebody else, that's the weapon you have. Bishop Oyedepo's wife, if you hear Bishop talk, Bishop talks very, very, you know what I mean? You know, powerfully. Yeah. So he makes statements like, no, my wife doesn't even need to think. I do all the thinking in the house. The woman will just look and just smile. The truth is that that's what he thinks. The reality is that after thinking and thinking, he thinks out what she wants him to do. She gave a testimony once. He wanted to choose a school for their kids. He said, look, they should go to this school. He said, no, I think they should go to that one. So she left it and went home and prayed and said, God, I think that school is better. And you know the school is better. And the Lord said, fine. Then the husband came one day and said, actually, you know, I've been thinking about it. That school, I think it's a better school. The woman said, yeah, you know. Then he comes and says, I do all the thinking in the house. That's what he thinks. The truth is that, you know, this is a joke. He said, one day, one pastor said that every man that his wife is controlling should come to this side. All the big men, fat men, large men, hairy men, they came to one side. All the men controlling their wives should come to this side. Then one tiny pink chomic man came alone to the other side. So the pastor came, how come? You are so strong. You are the only one here that's controlling your wife. He said, actually, sir, my wife said I should come here. Oh. All right, let me continue what I'm saying. Now, so, you see, I'm just going to talk about the order in the home, the weapons that people are supposed to use. But for me, I just believe that faith is the primary thing. I always tell my wife this, that, you see, there's never a decision I take, all right, that's primarily from my own good, which I don't really, I don't know the meaning of that anyway. But there's no, I never do that. Because I put everything into perspective. I choose, I look at everything. So even though I have the finances, are you getting my point? It doesn't mean I do what I feel is good for me. It just means that I have the responsibility. Do you follow my point? To look at your life, and I mean, I'm supposed to be a husband. You get my point. So I should husband very well. If I think you are doing what is not right, then I should let you know it is not right. And if it is really, really bad, then I must put my foot down that you shouldn't do what is bad, because I am held liable. Listen, this is this order of the scripture. So a husband is held liable for every action his wife takes that he was aware about or aware of. He agreed or not is not the point. Spiritually, you are held liable once you are aware of it. Whether you said yes or no in your heart is not the problem. Once you are aware and you did not actively stop it, do you understand what I'm going to say? Now, I mean, because why was Eli punished? Did Eli sleep with the women in the tent? No. Did he defraud anybody? No. Did he misuse the sacrifice of God? No. God said, you heard of what your sons were doing, and you did not sack them from being priests. So he got a full dose of their judgment. Why? He heard that the... You know that interesting? He actually talked to them. The Bible said that he called them and said, ah, boys, the boys. If a man sins against another, he not say, man go judge between them. But when you are now sinning against God, who will defend you against God, though? You know what you are doing is not good, though. Say, old school. Daddy doesn't understand. Daddy is too slow. Man, they are sharp. All right, Daddy, we have heard. Is that why you called us? Yes. All right, bye-bye. For that, when they were going to be judged, God, in fact, the judgment was directed to him, not even them. If he wanted to spare himself of judgment, he would have called and said, what did I hear happened? Listen to the story. Here's another story. It is true. Instantly, he announces to Israel that these two boys are no longer priests. Then God will punish them individually. That is how he will have spared himself. You know, say that, look, my hand no deal. Yes, your hand no deal. But you could have done something to stop the actions. The power was in your hands and you refused to exercise it. Therefore, you are liable. You get the principle here? That's just the way it is. Husband, look, that's why they said, for this cause shall a man leave his father. It's not shall a boy, like somebody said. No, if you are not ready to take such, you know, liabilities on your head, then please, just remain as a single boy. Are you getting what I'm saying? But as a man, you get my point. The sin of other people starts entering your head. Your wife sins, they punish you. It's a spiritual thing, and I'm serious about it. What I'm telling you is serious. Your wife is doing business, and she's defrauding people, and you know. You know what you do? If you don't want the company you started to fold because of judgment of the trade of your wife somewhere else, you had better, categorically, from this house, you do no business. Go and find a salary job. I said, my wife is very fast. She's very, very sharp. I know, my wife is smart. You know the girl a thief. No, you know she's a rogue. And you think you will found the company tomorrow and it will do well. Listen, it's a spiritual thing. The judgment for her sin that you are aware of is thrown to your head also. So tomorrow, after you do opening ceremony, then suddenly rain will fall, lightning will strike, and your building catches fire. Why? Because of money your wife stole in Cameroon. It's not you. You were not there. Are you getting the point I'm making? All right, please. Our time is really gone. Let me just summarize that, please, so that we won't just leave it hanging halfway. Then we'll continue from there. The point I wanted to make from there is the fact that was the principle of submission in the woman's life that was highlighted there. She made her statement and then she left it. All right? And she was well respected by God for that. All right? Because the Bible said that some people are highly esteemed. Sarah was someone that was highly esteemed. She made her point. The man did not hear it and she left it. And then God now stood in defense of what was right. If she had gone around hounding the man, God would never have said anything. Are you getting my point? God said, you can take care of it. Then go ahead and handle it. Why do I have to bother myself? I hope you're getting that point.